Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, August 23rd, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamott. With me today, I have the fantastic Charlotte Henry. How are you, Charlotte?
Hello, happy Friday.
Oh, well, now we know how you are, because obviously it's Friday. Also with me today, I have the equally lovely Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Okay, I'm ready. It's good to be here, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're ready.
I think that's conclusive proof I'm nicer than Brian.
Yes. I don't think we needed, I mean, like, who's
we needed more conclusive proof, I guess, yeah, is where we're headed. For,
like, who's like, I don't know. I'm still, my jury's still out on that. Who is that person?
Anyway. All right.
Yeah.
Here we go. The first thing we wanted to talk about today was an interesting topic that Charlotte brought up, talking about how Tim Cook has some really good, I'm not sure what we'd call it, political skills when it comes to people's relationships.
Diplomatic skills.
Skills, yeah. And I got to give credit to John Key. We recorded ACM yesterday on Thursday. And he and I were talking afterwards, and he was commenting to me on, like, Tim Cook's obviously incredible diplomatic skills.
Yeah, I mean, I think we might get him over here to try and fix Brexit. But this, I'm sort of joking, but sort of not, because he clearly does have very important business diplomatic skills. I'm saying this because on Wednesday, Donald Trump really sang the praises of Tim Cook. He said Cook called him whenever there's a problem. That's why he's a great executive. He calls me, the others don't. The others go out and hire expensive consultants. Tim Cook calls Donald Trump directly, the president said. Now, I think that's very telling. Never mind the politics of any of it. Donald Trump is clearly a different kind of president to a lot of other people. He's clearly has to be handled by the business community in a different way. Tim Cook, I think it's fair to say from what we know about Tim Cook, probably doesn't share much politically in common with President Trump, yet has managed to, but realizes that he's got to engage with the president over particularly tariffs. That's the key issue at the moment. And has, you know, they had dinner, I think this time last week on Friday evening, and has clearly won him over. And this is a theme throughout Tim Cook's kind of life. It struck me because in Leander Carney's biography of him, he tells a story of when Tim Cook won the Alabama Rural Electric Association essay competition, and his prize was an all-expenses-paid trip to Washington, D.C. He got to hear President Jimmy Carter speak, but he also met Alabama governor at the time was George Wallace, obviously a segregationist, and Cook was obviously polite, shook his hand, and, you know, by all accounts, didn't cause a scene, had a probably decent evening. But has later said that, you know, it wasn't an honour to meet George Wallace because of his segregationist views, and he says shaking his hands felt like a betrayal of my own beliefs. But it kind of indicates that Tim Cook does have this diplomatic ability and has always had this kind of ability, I think. To be able to interact even at that young age with people whose politics is totally different to his own. And obviously, we're making a few assumptions here, but it's clear from those comments from Cook that certainly George Wallace's politics were vastly different to Tim Cook's. And I think we can probably surmise Donald Trump's are as well. He's managed to navigate that and be the front man and the spokesman and the diplomat in chief for his business. And given that some of those tariffs look like they're being delayed, clearly his strategy has paid off.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. And it was interesting to me when you noted out of the book that that he had shaken George Wallace's hand, and even at that point felt like, this is a thing that I shouldn't be doing because it goes against what I believe, my personal beliefs.
Yeah, he didn't say it at the time, but one can assume he felt it at the time. Yeah. But he made those comments later on,
right? But also, he's from the South. He's a Southern gentleman. obviously, mm-hmm. and has, and you know, there's a certain amount of I'm doing this because it's what I'm supposed to be doing kind of thing, you know, to go along in society. And there, it seems like to me there is more of that in the South sometimes than in other places. Which is not to say that lots of places are completely impolite, but there are a lot of times where there's a lot of sort of go along to get along, and it seems to happen in the South more than it does in other places based on conversations I've had with people who lived in the South.
Well, not only that, I'm gonna step into risky territory because I don't obviously know what it's like to be Tim Cook, and I don't know what it's like to be a gay man in America, and I don't know what it's like to be a gay man in the South of the United States, and I don't know what it's like to be a gay man in business. Tim Cook does. And he was in the closet for a very long time. And I can't even imagine the number of homophobic jokes that were, or comments that were made, you know, in front of him, to him, involved, you know, just comments that were made, things that he would have to gird himself to learn how to, you know, get along. Mm-hmm. In the face of comments that, and not to mention the kinds of the amount of racism he would have been exposed to he's a white man, obviously, but racism and fighting racism are these central tenets of his life. He's made that very, very clear.
That's a really good point. Again, in the book, there's a story where he is a bit of a dispute over what actually happened, but he claims he saw a Klansman in his local town burning a cross outside of, I think, someone's house. So again, you're absolutely right that, like, those are the central tenets of his personal politics.
Mm-hmm. And learning how to you know, to being successful when that is a part of what you're dealing with on a daily basis, I can only imagine I'm doing my best to speculate here, but it has to have given him some diplomatic skills. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we're seeing that play out on the current politics and tech stage.
Mm-hmm. And I think,
yeah, I really agree with Brian on that.
Yeah. And I don't think there's any great leap of logic there, Brian, considering, you know, the time in which he lived.
Liz.
You know, well, yeah. But I mean, like, you know, like the 60s and the 70s where that, you know, like the 50s where that really, you know, it wasn't great to be 80s. A gay person, whatever stripe that was, wherever you were. And so I think. What?
And in some, in the 80s and the 90s and still in the 2000s sometimes too.
Oh, yeah, you know,
it wasn't
absolutely
that long ago that he came out.
Exactly. And so I think you're absolutely right. Like, that has to give you a certain amount of diplomatic know-how. And what I wonder, and this is far more speculative than your speculation, Brian, but I wonder if those particular skills, regardless of how forthcoming Tim Cook was about how he developed them, is part of what Steve Jobs saw in him that he thought made sense for the company moving forward. And that's part of why he got picked, was because he had these kind of diplomatic skills and the ability to deal with people of all stripes and all political standpoints, you know, not just, you know, we're not going to do business with that company because they're kind of icky, you know, but being able to sort of power through that if that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's entirely plausible. You could also, there's also this thing that we know, for example, that the only two pictures Tim Cook has in his office are apparently, I think, JFK and Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't pretend to be someone he's not. He's actually, in a way, been far more political in the leadership of Apple than Steve Jobs ever was.
Absolutely.
But, you know, things that, you know, how big Pride is now with Apple doing, you know, events and support Apple gives to that movement, how big, you know, hiring Lisa Jackson and taking on the environmental agenda. That can only be Tim Cook's politics, right? If it's not, it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, interesting, but also because the points both of you have made about being a Southern gentleman, about having had to develop these diplomatic skills as a younger man, he's clearly able to navigate between the two.
Yeah. And that takes skill. I mean, yeah. I'm impressed with his ability to do so. Like, I don't know if I would have that kind of temperament when it came to dealing with people that I fundamentally disagreed with. I think it would be really hard for me. So I applaud his diplomacy. He seems to be really good at it. Maybe if he's ever done with Apple, he'll end up being an ambassador for the United States to someplace. Awesome.
Yeah, he'd probably be a good State Department, good Secretary of State.
He really would.
Yeah.
But, all right. I'm glad we've planned out his relaxing, low-key retirement for him once he's done with Apple.
One last thing on this. He has said over and over again that he believes in speaking with people with whom you disagree.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And he has made this point repeatedly, and he's made this point about regulations and governments around the world. You know, obviously referring, in my opinion, to governments like China. Mm-hmm. And he believes that being in the room and having a conversation is a better way to affect change than to not be in the room and have a conversation.
Absolutely.
And I think that we're seeing that play out in this current conversation with him reaching out to Donald Trump too. So that's it.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Well, there you go. And like I said, I'm glad we've planned his low-key retirement for him. Quite honestly, mm-hmm. Secretary of State might be less work than running Apple. I don't know. But certainly it would be interesting to watch him make that work. All right. Our sponsor today is My Wall Street. If you've ever been interested in investing in the stock market, you can find out lots and lots of information by going online and trying to figure out how to get started. But there's not a lot there that's going to give you advice on how to make a good investment or how to get a good return. You're just going to find lots and lots and lots of opinions, and that makes it really easy to get overwhelmed, and that makes it really easy to just give up and decide the stock market's not for you. My Wall Street wants to change that. They've done lots and lots of research. They have investors who've spent loads of time putting together like a short list of stocks. And some of the stocks on that list have grown fivefold. And they're not brokers. So they're interested in simplifying all of the stuff that you need to do in order to become an investor. And they're more like an investment companion than an investment firm. So as a TDO listener, you can get access to the entire My Wall Street app for 30 days instead of the usual 7 for completely free. Here's how you do that. Go to mywallstreet.com/TDO. That's mywallst.com/TDO. And download their app now, and you will get access to all of the expert guidance, everything I told you about within the app. And you can continue with them if you decide that that's a thing that you want to do for $9.99 a month. We'd like to thank My Wall Street for sponsoring the show today. Now, we've got a couple real quick topics here for the back half of the show. First is a Today at Apple session that a lot of people are probably going to be interested in because it features Taylor Swift, right, Charlotte?
It certainly does. Andrew wrote about this yesterday because Apple announced it yesterday. There's a Today at Apple session where you can remix a track by Taylor Swift, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And it goes live today, which is when her new album has come out. And that is on Apple Music as well. And I suspect, and it's kind of dominating the front of Apple Music. If you go in, it's kind
yeah.
of, there's a big, big pink Taylor Swift pictures, which is interesting in itself because she's not exclusively on Apple Music anymore.
Right.
But anyway, they seem to still be friends. So yeah, if you want to go to this session, have a look at your local Apple store, because you remix her track, You Need to Calm Down. I think there's a video of her talking about what inspired it as well. Mm-hmm. It's all done using GarageBand on iPhone, which is interesting and a good, it's a pretty good, you know, a starting opening music tool. I did a similar Today Apple session, but it was video based, and like, it's good. These are fun sessions to do, and you learn pretty useful skills, and it's fun to kind of put your twist on other people's tracks, or in the case I did video. So I suspect people have quite a lot of fun doing this.
Now, in unusual fashion, Charlotte, you are able to attend one of these, right? Did we determine that
so.
We have these in the UK?
I can't quite tell. I went on to the Shadet Apple and it was there and then it wasn't, but I'm going to keep my eye out on it.
Okay.
Out for it. So so she's the third. It's called a remix lab, I think they call it. Mm-hmm. Madonna's had one before and Billie Eilish has done one before.
Mm-hmm.
And Taylor Swift is the third.
Well, I think she's fourth. I don't know how many others there were, but the one that you can see commonly in my Apple today at Apple Search, what I can see is one with Swizz Beatz. And so there's one of those where you do the remixing with that. And I will tell you that when I look at the Today at Apple page, it shows me the banner at the top for the Taylor Swift session, but it says it's September 6th. And when you scroll through all the sessions, the calendar only goes out as of this recording. The calendar only goes out to September 5th. So I can't see it in the regular stuff, but it does advertise it at the top with a time and a location. So, I assume that we will get a full report from Brian, who's going to be first in line for one of these.
I think you misunderstood my comment about not having much to say on this. I like remixes. I like good remixes. I like interesting remixes. I especially like remixes that give a song a completely different look and feel. Mm-hmm. There were some great Cure remixes. I'm going to reveal my age a little bit there. Some great Cure remixes.
And I'm revealing it by enjoying those in my mind along with you.
Very similar artist to Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
In the early 90s. That I thoroughly enjoyed, and I've been fascinated with remixes ever since, and learning how to do that, and actually having access to the basic tracks to remix. Although I do wonder, of course, how many of the actual tracks you will be given access to. It seems like a lot of stuff would probably be lumped together.
Sure.
I doubt you're going to get 50 or 60 tracks to be able to play around with. So anyway, it should be a fun thing, and I think anyone who wants to learn how to do some remixing and these skills, the exposure you're going to get to this stuff might well play into other more sophisticated remixy, like Logic, Pro Tools, or even some of the other tools that are out there.
I thought it was interesting they're doing it on an iPhone. I'd have thought you. Maybe have an iPad, but anyway.
So did I.
I'd rather do it on an iPad or even a Mac, but
I agree.
Definitely an iPad with the acreage that you get there to actually do the remixing itself. I'm with you, Brian. Like, even not being the biggest Taylor Swift fan, I feel like this would be an interesting one to go and do, if for no other reason than to sit in a class where people talk about, like, this is how you put together a remix, like, we know what the original sounds like, and here are ways that you can riff on, like, mechanically, like, you take this piece and you speed it up or slow it down or whatever you do, and then move on to the next element. I think it would be interesting to find out what kind of skills go into something like that, because I too am a fan of the remix. If you are a fan of the remix, or if you know if you have a Cure remix that was the B-side of a Japanese import, from the late 80s, Brian would love to hear about it, and so would I. And you can tell us about those at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave a comment in the show notes and tell us what your favorite remixes are. We have one tiny little topic for the end of the show today, sort of our cocktail moment to send you off into the weekend with a smile, and that is the tech note that Apple released yesterday, which is basically about the care and feeding of your Apple credit card. Right, Brian?
Lol.
Yeah. You don't wipe it with leather and denim.
Lol.
Yeah. Keep it away from leather. So,
also,
wallets are out. Keep it away from denim. So pants are out.
Yeah. Do not taunt the Apple card either.
Does Apple's this fun card.
Freaking thing need like daily watering and light and fresh air? I mean, what's going on here?
We know what's going on.
Go for it, Brian.
I love Apple. I love Apple products. This is this is like the new poster child for Apple's form over function. The Apple Card looks great. I've got one. Mm-hmm. It looks great. It looks, but you know, don't store it between two other credit cards because it'll scratch. Don't rub it with leather and denim.
Discolor. Like that's what it's not like it'll disintegrate or something, but like if you keep it in your jeans pocket, it might turn blue. Like,
it's insane. It's completely crazy. Completely crazy that they would release a credit card like this. I mean, I'm expecting an Apple Care Plus plan.
Okay, so
Apple Card sucks.
They'll replace it for you once for free, but after that, getting a new one is $29. That's how Apple makes money on this credit card. Now, Charlotte, you had a theory. My theory is what Brian just mentioned, which is this is how Apple is going to sell everybody Apple Card socks, which they're just going to swap out the labels on the iPod socks and sell you Apple Card socks instead. Charlotte, what's your theory on this?
So once I stopped laughing, I
still haven't. So go ahead.
Like once I managed to contain the laughter, I wondered if this was slightly a part of Apple doesn't really care if you have the card. Like you're not really meant, the card is not really meant for use. You get it automatically comes to your phone. The second stage is getting a card, but really the Apple card exists straight away in your digital wallet. Mm-hmm. I think that's all Apple really cares about. Like, okay, you know, the pretty card is almost a souvenir that you have this thing on your phone. Mm-hmm. So I'm not entirely sure Apple. Like, so I agree with you both that it's form over function, and once Apple was making a physical thing, they wanted it to be pretty. But also, I think they probably don't really care about the actual credit card, and eventually, because it's all about being on Apple Pay anyway.
I hear what you're saying there. I think it starts with, like, this is probably the last major thing that Johnny Ive designed, right?
That would make sense.
How long until we were going to blame Johnny Ive.
From a time standpoint, it seems likely that this is the last thing that he designed. And it's just, it's how it looks out of the box versus what happens. So I don't know. I guess you're probably right, Charlie. They don't really care what happens to it afterwards, but that is insanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've spoken about this before, because you guys don't have a lot of contactless and Apple Pay and that stuff anyway. It's not as widespread as it might be.
Right. Maybe in the Bay Area. Like, if you're an Apple employee who's been testing it, it's entirely possible that you could go extended periods of time with ever using your Apple card without taking the physical card out of its special location and using it.
Normal people.
Right.
I was at a Red Robin this last weekend, and they take Samsung Pay. They don't take Apple Pay. In the Bay Area.
I mean, okay.
It's not everywhere here either. It's not everywhere. It's not everywhere it should be.
Oh, of course. I am continually shocked at the places that I feel like should be taking Apple Pay that aren't. So I'm with you on that 100%.
So Charlotte, is your thought here that this was a deliberate plan to make you want to use it on Apple Pay? Or is your thought that the card itself is so much of an afterthought that Apple doesn't care?
I think it's probably the latter. Okay. If I was really cynical, I would go for the former. But I think probably they just went, we want something that looks pretty that people are not going to really use, because what they're really going to use is on their phone. Mm-hmm. I suspect that's how it happened. So let's get Johnny to design a pretty thing. Mm-hmm. I suspect that would be my guess, as opposed to the more cynical kind of.
Yeah, I don't buy into the cynical view, and I think that he probably even starts with, like, you know, design this, and okay, well, I've designed it. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, now use it. Well, don't use it. Why would you didn't
tell me it was going to go in people's wallets. Yeah,
you didn't tell me to use it.
You didn't give me any parameters. You know, wallets and jeans pockets. Yeah, I would be interested to see if there's like a support article from any of the other companies that also have metal cards. I know it's not the same metal, but
well, I think part of it would be the finish, though. Hmm? That white finish. I think it's part of it that it's mostly the white finish, and the white finish is what is so different.
That's true. It probably is.
I think I mentioned, I don't know, that I've got the Amazon Prime card, mm-hmm. and it's also a metal.
Right, but it's black.
Yeah, it's not black, but it's
super dark.
It's not white.
Yeah,
it's not white, and it's I don't know which is yeah, they've got a completely different.
Yeah, I don't think they're the same metal.
They're probably not even the same. I imagine actually that the Amazon card is aluminum.
I think so.
But anyway, the point is that there is no other card like this.
That's true. And do not taunt it if you get one.
Do not taunt it.
Do not taunt Apple
Back
Fun
away
card.
If it's smoking.
Avoid direct contact with skin, I think was one of those disclaimers too. Anyway, enjoy. I'm glad to have both of you here today to send people off to the weekend on a happy note. Charlotte is off to start her weekend momentarily. So Charlotte, thanks so much for coming by and have a great weekend.
Thanks so much. Yes.
And Brian, thanks for being here and I hope you have a great weekend.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing us these easy topics.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamon. I will talk to all of you Monday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.